Yeah, so we had a really fantastic demo down at the boat ramp in Port Botany. 500 people showed up at less than 12 hours notice off a rapid response text list, and we eventually were able to march up to the bridge where the trucks enter into Hutchison Port that has a contract with ZIM, the Israeli shipping line that is now a target of the BDS and the Block the Boat campaign. And yeah, people sat down on the road. We blocked the trucks for at least 2 hours. The terminal actually just cancelled all the slots for those trucks. There were other trucks that had to leave via a secret exit out the back. And we also found out that the ship, the Calandra, that the protest was targeting had been sort of at anchor and doing circles at sea for almost 2 weeks after it had left the port of Melbourne to try to avoid us. But in the end, it didn't avoid us. And yeah, you asked about why, you know, unionists are getting behind this Palestine campaign. I mean, the MUA in particular has long-standing support, you know, for all sort of oppressed groups fighting for liberation and freedom, and particularly for Palestine. And I think, you know, it's that solidarity that we know that unions are built on, and that doesn't just mean solidarity between, you know, workers in Australia. It means international solidarity, and workers in Gaza right now are going through absolute hell. Many people are being targeted because of the work they do, like journalists and doctors, and walkies have a lot of power and a proud history of you know, taking action against apartheid in South Africa and against the war in Vietnam. So we're standing in that tradition.
I want to talk to you a little bit about, I guess, some of the developments within the union movement here in Australia in a moment. But firstly, I guess for the sake of our listeners, can you explain in more detail why ZIM in particular are being targeted? You mentioned there, of course, it's a part of the boycotts and divestments campaign and sanctions campaign. But yeah, what is particularly, I guess, relevant with ZIM, and why are, you know, dock workers and wharfies and other unionists targeting ZIM?
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons why ZIM is a really excellent target, and this is primarily being led by, you know, the Palestine justice movement with the backing of wharfies and others. But ZIM is the oldest Israeli shipping line. It was a publicly owned shipping line that actually transported settlers to historic Palestine, who, you know, then started taking over land, expelling Palestinians as refugees and massacring people as well. So they, you know, they were born in, you know, in bloodshed. They also are responsible for transporting weapons directly to Israel. So between 2011 and 2014, there's reports that show they transported over 19,000 tons of military equipment and weapons from the US, and that includes white phosphorus, which has been internationally condemned as, you know, a chemical weapon that shouldn't be used in warfare. So I think, you know, there's many reasons why, you know, they're a really important target. I mean, the managers as well, the CEO and the second in charge actually used to be commanders of the Israeli Navy. And ZIM has put out public statement that they're, you know, basically at the service of the Israeli state through this war on Gaza. And they've introduced an extra surcharge for what they call a war risk premium charge, but I like to call it a genocide tax. So, you know, there's 101 reasons why ZIM shipping shouldn't be welcome in Port Botany.
Now, demonstrations, pickets and actions around the world that are, you know, sort of, you know, people taking action in solidarity with the people of Gaza and the West Bank and the occupied territories have largely been met with quite severe police and state repression. You have incidents in countries such as the UK and France where, you know, people just waving a Palestinian flag or wearing a kafir have been arrested. I understand that at the demonstration last Tuesday, there was some quite heavy-handed expanded police repression, and quite a few people were arrested. And I guess quite worryingly, some of those arrested have been charged under the new protest laws. Can you tell our listeners about that? What's the sort of the outcome so far, particularly around those that have been charged under the new protest laws?
Yeah, the police were very heavy-handed on the day, and it was completely unnecessary. I mean, they had, you know, the ability to really move us off the road without needing to charge or arrest anybody. They were quite determined to get protesters off the road before the 10 p.m. shift started. So that's, I think, when they really started lashing out at people. People were, you know, slammed to the ground, had their shirts ripped and so on. But yeah, really worryingly, out of the 23 people arrested and charged, 7 of those have been charged with, as you say, under the new very draconian anti-protest laws in New South Wales, which was brought in under the Liberals but maintained by the Labor state government now, which means, you know, they can be charged with up to $220,000 in fines or even up to 2 years in jail for blockading critical infrastructure, specifically ports, road and rail. So defending those protesters and getting the charges dropped and the anti-protest law scrapped is, you know, going to be a really critical next step for our campaign. And we'll be rallying outside the state premier's, New South Wales Parliament House, but calling on Chris Minns in particular to drop the charges and scrap the protest laws this Friday.
Now, of course, our listeners should know that we are in the middle of this so-called 4-day truce. Was certainly not really an adequate ceasefire by any means. But I guess, you know, to play devil's advocate, some people saying, well, you know, we should be, you know, pulling back our actions and so forth. We've got what we wanted. You know, there's no longer fighting there. I guess, can you speak to that? And obviously, you know, Netanyahu himself has said that as soon as the 4 days are over, they're going to continue the horrific bombing and campaign in Gaza. But, you know, I guess, talking to that, why is it, you know, more important that our people get active and don't just forget about this issue because of this so-called 4-day truce?
Yeah, I mean, the 4-day so-called humanitarian pause is, you know, an absolute drop in the ocean. And actually, the, you know, the violence hasn't stopped. The bombing might have stopped, but there's still, you know, plenty of reports that people of people being shot at, including, you know, Red Cross vehicles. You know, medical vehicles, there's still people trapped in Al-Shifa Hospital. There's still doctors who are staying with them so patients aren't abandoned. And, you know, like, people are facing this with the prospect that all the, you know, worst horrors of the last 50 days are about to start again. And that's, you know, an incredibly just horrific thing to have to be living with. But I think the bigger picture is, you know, to understand the context of October 7, you know, the breakout through the borders that, you know, Hamas did and the kidnappings, that didn't come out of nowhere. That, you know, it comes out of 75 years of colonial oppression. It comes out of the siege on Gaza. That means the people of Gaza have no state, have no rights, have no control of their own water, no freedom of movement. People can't live like that, and every day that they're subject to their oppression, they will find ways to resist. There's been 4, you know, wars on Gaza since the siege began, and this cycle of violence will continue until there's justice and liberation and free Palestine. So I think for the union movement in particular, we have to identify that Israel is an apartheid state. And until Palestinians are free, equal, have the right of return, have the same, you know, rights to vote and autonomy and sovereignty that everyone should have, the struggle is far from finished.
Certainly, as you're saying there, of course, this is going nowhere. In fact, you know, there's the likelihood that things will just get much worse before there's any potential hope for justice and freedom for the Palestinian peoples. I guess, you know, talking about unionists for Palestine, initially, of course, we saw from, you know, some of the major peak union bodies pretty you know, admittedly quite sort of pathetic statements from the ACTU and others. But since then, there has been quite a bit of movement, and obviously a lot of trade unionists getting active, in particular, as you've mentioned there, the MUA, but also others. You know, for our listeners' sake, if they want to get involved in a group such as Unions of Palestine, or just even within their own trade unions, their own workplaces, what can you suggest that they do to get active and act in solidarity with the people of Palestine?
Yeah, I think that's been one of, you know, the bright lights in this dark time, is the just groundswell of support for Palestine that's coming from the grassroots, and people being so keen to get organized, including, you know, hundreds of rank and file union members who've really run way ahead of where their union leaderships are up to, but are also doing a lot of work to bring the official union position with them. So, you know, firstly, I'd tell people to go and follow Unionists for Palestine on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It's a national group, so there's groups sort of popping up in each state. And from there, you can find the information if your union already, there's already a rank and file organized group. Teachers are getting really organized, ASU members have a fantastic group, nurses are starting to get more and more organized as well. So there's heaps of ways to get involved. There's a petition for union members to show their solidarity that has over 3,000 signatures now, and that if you sign that petition, your contact details will go into like an email database as well. You can get email updates. So this week there's a week of workplace action, and we're asking people to do anything they can at work, really. That might be just simply taking the petition to your workplace and getting a few workmates to sign it, or it could be wearing the kefir and taking a group photo during your lunch break, inviting a Palestinian speaker to work. It really depends on what you can do at your workplace, but all those little actions build into something, you know, much, much more powerful. And we have seen that it's having a direct impact on official union position. The CFMEU just put out a national statement. The MUA at the national level has now, you know, put out a statement. The ASU and the Nurses and Midwives Union are now bringing flags to the rallies in Sydney. So it is really having a tangible impact. And that's all going to put pressure on the Labor government, because as we know, our unions are affiliated to the Labor Party. They have delegates at Labor Conference. So those debates will ripple through in really, really critical ways.